The idea of letting federal employees do government business on personal mobile devices makes a lot of agencies nervous. The Defense Department has been one of the most nervous of all for years, but that rigid rejection of BYOD might be loosening up just a bit. The Pentagon is planning its own test of BYOD a few months from now. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu writes about it in this week's edition of Inside the Reporter's Notebook. And Jared, I've told the story on the program a number of times of being at the AFCEA Bethesda event at the beginning of Vivek Kundra's tenure as Chief Information Officer of the United States.
Yeah, that was the first
States.
Time any of this discussion really started, I think.
It was, and I recall the faces of the contractors in the room just brightening up and their mouths drooling, and I remember the faces of the agency people there just turning completely white with horror about what was potentially about to be unleashed upon them, and that was at least 4 years ago, and it might have been more. And so it's striking to me all of these years later that you're reporting in the Notebook this week that Terry Halverson seems to be rather comfortable with this idea.
I wouldn't say super comfortable, and I think you and I would both testify to the fact that not much has happened in any agency since Vivek first made those comments 4 years ago. And we know very little about this pilot itself. Terry Halverson, the DOD CIO who you mentioned, who, by the way, became the permanent CIO last week, congratulations to him.
Indeed.
Gave us just a few dribbles of detail about a pilot project that he's planning this summer in a conference call this week. What we do know is it's going to start sometime, as I said, this summer. It's mostly going to involve a controlled group of DOD employees who work mostly in sort of DOD headquarters functions, mostly in the Fourth Estate as opposed to out in the military services. And maybe the most important thing we know is that the vast majority of Defense Department employees probably should not get their hopes up if they're hoping to use their personal phones for government email or any kind of other official business anytime soon. Halverson made it very clear in that call that he thinks BYOD is definitely worth exploring, which is a big step, I think, for DOD. But there are going to be cases where it makes sense within DOD, maybe where there aren't as many concerns about data security, depending on what kind of job you're doing, rather. But there are also going to be a lot of places where it will never, ever happen.
I think one of the things that would be helpful is if people did some homework on bring your own device, where that's working and where it's not. Lots of big enterprises are rescinding bring your own device. Now, I'm not saying that's the right answer everywhere. And what I suspect will happen in DOD is because of our size and all the businesses we're in, there will be places that bring your own device is going to work in. And there are going to be a whole lot of places where it doesn't. And it's going to be much like the cloud and everything else. The DOD, size, scale, everything we do, there are not going to be these very easy, clean answers that says, yep, we're in the BYOD for DOD.
And that line of thinking, Francis, is kind of a reoccurring theme in Halverson's approach to IT within the Defense Department. You know, he kind of bristles at the idea of comparing any kind of DOD technology adoption, I guess I would say, to any other private company. And he kind of likes to pound the table about the idea that it's actually five separate, very large companies that are all kinds of different businesses. They're complicated, so it's hard to command and control all of them with sort of policy directives from the Pentagon. And I think you've seen that approach even when he was acting CIO, when he did things like rescinding previous orders on cloud computing, telling the military services they could buy cloud on their own based on what their own needs were, rather than running everything through the Defense Information Systems Agency.
The item here that jumped out at me, Jared, is, and it's not connected directly to Halverson's comments, you point that out very carefully. You write inside the Reporter's Notebook, separately, for the latest generation of government-furnished BlackBerry devices it's begun fielding to small numbers of DOD personnel, the department's proven to itself that dual-persona technologies are sufficiently secure for unclassified data. I guess the word there that popped out at me is BlackBerries. I mean, they are sticking with BlackBerry devices even in the smartphone era. And I understand they're likely to be, I imagine they're BlackBerries that function as iPhones or Android smartphones do, but they seem to like the security that's available with that network.
I'm glad you noticed that. The word BlackBerry did not come from the conference call this week. It was actually from his congressional testimony a couple weeks ago when he proudly held up a commercial mobile device that he said was acting as the Defense Department's first ever dual persona device. But that's the key point here. Whether it's a bring-your-own-device model or whether it's something that the government furnishes, I think one of the reasons DoD is starting to feel more comfortable with this BYOD path is that it's proven with this next generation of BlackBerries, which the department is generally very comfortable with, it's been using them for many, many years, that it is possible to do this thing where you segregate a personal user's data from anything that is coming in from the government side and that needs a more stringent level of protection so that you can use, as Mr. Halverson says, you know, your Pandora app and check your personal email on one side of the device, and there's a sort of virtual firewall between that and everything that you're doing on the government side. So again, as you said, these are two separate efforts. One is government-furnished devices, and one is the eventual potential, maybe, of letting people bring their own personal devices to do government work on. But again, I think the fact that this technology exists and has proven itself to some degree has given the government confidence that they can move forward with BYOD, because it really answers one of the main security concerns, which is, do I trust this device?
And the Pentagon pursuing this way of doing it isn't surprising, because the general trend seems to be the idea of securing the data, not securing the device, or not exclusively securing the device. And so it makes sense that that's where the Pentagon would go. Inside the Reporter's Notebook this week, Jared, you're also writing about the third offset strategy and some actions that Bob Work is taking along those lines.
Yeah, so we've talked about this in a fair amount of detail before, but the third offset strategy, just to remind people, is the latest iteration of what DoD thinks it needs to do to stay ahead of potential competitors. Just to go way back in history, the first version was nuclear weapons. The second version was back in the 1970s when we built things like precision-guided munitions and advanced strike fighters. The third offset strategy is really designed to get at what DoD sees as a narrowing technology gap between what the military of the United States has available to it right now and what potential competitors like China and Russia are doing. Okay, now that that setup is in place, one of the things that they announced this week is that they're really, really concerned about this area called electronic warfare, which is somewhat distinct and somewhat related to cyber, which we talk about a lot. We can get into the distinctions between those two things later if you want to. But there was a Defense Science Board report that is still classified that was first ordered about 18 months ago that came out and said that the department is really lagging behind where it needs to be in terms of electronic warfare, which really means, as distinct from cyber, the ability to operate in what is still really a physical world. We're talking right now on 1500 kilohertz in the AM spectrum, which is a physical thing. And we used to be able to manipulate as a military, as a nation, that spectrum in a lot better ways than we can right now. So that means things like injecting messages in an offensive way into an enemy's communications, or protecting your own communications, your own RF communications abilities, your own RF communications capabilities, rather, from being penetrated or being jammed by an enemy signal. That's those kinds of capabilities, according to that Defense Science Board report, have really deteriorated since the end of the Cold War, when we were really concerned about those things. So what's happened is this week the Deputy Defense Secretary Bob Work signed a memo that orders a new Electronic Warfare Programs Council to be stood up. It's going to be co-chaired by Frank Kendall, who's the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology, and Sandy Winnefeld, the Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. What they're really going to do is examine whatever investments the military services have going on in the electronic warfare area and try and coordinate them into a more cohesive structure, and then plan for what they think the U.S. military needs to be doing in the future to stay ahead of potential adversaries like China and like Russia.
One more council that you're writing about inside the Reporter's Notebook this week, I guess technically it's called a panel, is the Commission on the United States Army, and we now know the names of the people who will be serving there.
Yes, it is the Commission on the Future of the United States Army, modeled loosely on a similar panel that Congress set up for the Air Force, and actually had a great deal to do with how the Air Force is structured its current posture right now. But that panel, as you mentioned, was allocated 4 picks to the president and 4 to Congress. I'll just rattle off a few of the names which people might recognize. Bob Hale was one of the congressional picks, one of the former DOD comptrollers. He was the comptroller until last year, actually. He was one of the picks from Congress. Ray Chandler, people will remember his name. He left the Army last year after being the sergeant major of the Army, the top enlisted official in the Army. Carter Ham, who was the commander of U.S. Africa Command. Kathleen Hicks, who is at CSIS now. Tom Lamont, the former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manpower and Reserve Affairs until 2013. Jack Stoltz is another name people will probably recognize. He was the chief of the Army Reserve up until recently. So those are a few of the names. But the main point here is Congress set up this panel as a way to sort of, I don't want to say duck decisions about the future of the Army, but sort of pass them off to some more independent and more clear-thinking observers about how to mostly diffuse arguments between the active Army and the Guard and Reserve about how force structure decisions are going to be made as the Army shrinks in size from a peak of 470,000 down to 450,000, and maybe eventually as low as 420,000. There's been a lot of friction there, including the one that's got probably the most attention, the active Army's decision to absorb a bunch of the attack helicopters into its inventory and move some of the more utility helicopters into the Guard and Reserve's inventory, which has ruffled a lot of feathers.
You have the entire list of all of the people that will be on that commission. You have more detail on all the stories that we talked about, and far fewer coffee stains inside the reporter's notebook than the last time that we got together. So it's great to have you on, as always.
Thanks, Francis.